One of the hobbies that I used to pursue when I was still working in Point Place Church was to ask a few worshipers now and then about conversations that they might have during their drive home after Sunday services. Questions like, "What'd you think of the sermon? Any mind-changing ideas? Were the hymns stimulating, as they are today? Were you glad that you were there? What would you change?" These kinds of questions I would ask folks who were willing to talk, of course, and not just say nice things. I've been around the block enough to know that sometimes our conversations aren't so much on the hour of worship, but are more practical in fact. Our conversations could have been like, "Well, Soon ignored me completely during the fellowship hour, and obviously she's a snob." Or, "Worship really didn't mean very much to me, because I was upset that Dad wouldn't listen to my side of the story." Or, "That new checkout boy at the Kroger's gave me the wrong change again. Why do they hire such stupid kids?" Or, "They asked me to be president again, and I hate the job." And I'm certain that you could add a few more frustrating comments that might be rolling around in your heads during this Sunday morning service of worship. So many times our lives run that path. We sit on our thrones of judgment and decide the worth and value of everyone we see and with whom we associate. However, if we were to be questioned, we would swear that we always practice amazing respect and honor and fairness to everyone. And when it comes to judging ourselves, now that's even more of a cover-up. We just might judge the actions and the words and the opinions of ourselves somewhat grudgingly to be slightly ugly now and then. But obviously, it's that we have a logical reason as to why and what we say and we do. That always makes sense to us. But the results are the same. There are times when I think this judging behavior of ours began way back in our younger days. It seemed harmless enough to call the neighbor kids by names like dork and nerd and greaseball. But how did we get into this senseless rut that we have today without really realizing it? Why should we feel good when we put other people down? Why do we keep pushing for such a sick feeling of superiority? God speaks to this tendency of being critical of others in today's gospel reading with some rather down-to-earth instructions. So listen as I share these powerful words of direction from the sixth chapter of Luke. "But I tell you to hear me. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. If someone strikes you on the cheek, turn to him the other also. If someone takes your cloak, do not stop him from taking your tunic. Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do unto you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies. Do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Your reward will be great, and you will be sons and daughters of the Most High, because God is kind to the ungrateful and the wickedly. Be merciful, just as God is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Give, that you will be given. Forgive, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. In plain and simple words, Jesus pronounces us not any better than the worst sinner when we choose to resent others and when we set ourselves up to be judges. And the sad commentary of our judgments is that we not only separate ourselves from each other, but also raise an impossible wall between us and the love of God for us. When we are willing to live, giving no mercy and grace to another, we make God powerless to share with us any mercy or grace. May I share with you a dream? The dream I experienced the other night. I don't really have many dreams, and I really can't remember them later. And those I do remember don't make much sense. But this dream was a good one. I guess I must have been pondering the scriptures when I went to sleep to cause it all. You see, Jesus came into our Sandusky living room and asked bluntly if I had any idea of the conflict that was going on in the lives of some of our friends. When I expressed supreme ignorance, he invited me to accompany him home with a friendly family after church worship service. I would be invisible, of course. And as we looked down from the ceiling of the sanctuary that Sunday, we saw our selected family sitting in their favorite family pew. Only in a dreamland can one learn what's whirling around in another's thoughts. Jesus whispered that Tom was 45. He had had a strong desire to be in control of his loving family. But Tom was frustrated and angry most of the time because he couldn't be in control of it all. Sitting next to him was his wife, Mary. What she wanted more than anything was Tom's love and companionship. But his work schedule didn't give him much opportunity for that. And now comes Joe, their 15-year-old. Tom is fearful that they'll not have the money for Joe to go to college. But what Joe wanted more than anything was to be in control of his own life and to have a good time. Next was Sally. Sally was 14. She wanted to be popular more than anything else. But Sally wasn't smiling much these days because she had tried out to be a cheerleader and lost to the girl that she had hated since the third grade. And at the end of the pew was Grandma. She was 80-ish. She had broken her hip in a fall and now lives with her daughter until she recovers. She has a son who lives across town in an expensive house, but he hasn't spoken to her since she criticized his new wife. And now we have a flashback from Sunday worship to Friday dinner. Tom announces that all should be on hand to clean the garage on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. And this is when the family ruckus started. Now ahead to Sunday morning, with bowed heads during service. But their minds and their hearts were far from the worship service. Tom was stewing on Friday night when he got a phone call from the police. Joe and his friends had gotten into a fight after the game. The only words spoken on the way home were, "You're grounded for a month," from Tom, and, "But you haven't heard my side of the story," from Joe. Sally had stayed overnight with a friend and was greeted when returning home at 8:30 Saturday morning with a smack on the head by Joe, who was frustrated by his dad's actions. Mom, in annoyance, sent both of them to their rooms, which left Mom and Dad to clean the garage alone. Tom didn't like the way that Mary was sorting nails, so she showed her disapproval by retreating loudly with slammed doors to the laundry room. Grandma comes around the corner expressing a wish that folks would quit slamming doors so much. Now it's Sunday morning, and worship is over. Of course, pleasant conversation takes place during the church fellowship hour. But then Jesus asks if he might join them for dinner and conversation later. And my invisible self is going along. During dessert, Jesus asks each to share their needs to be happy. Tom needed some respect and appreciation for how hard he had worked to keep the money that the family needed to be successful. They just don't understand all the stress and hassle that I go through. And my family only creates more burdens. Jesus replied to him that he understood the pressures, but observed that his family is scared of his anger and criticism. And Jesus says, "Let me take the log of self-pity out of your eye. I have given you Mary and the kids for support. if you'll let them. I have forgiven you. Will you forgive them for failing you? Mary spoke that she needed to be alone with Tom, to feel like a team with the kids, and some time to rest by herself away from her mother. Jesus said, I understand your loneliness. Let me take the log of bitterness from your eye. Rest your exhausted spirit in me and face the responsibilities that you must face. Joe spoke of needing Tom to listen and understand his side of things instead of always judging him. Jesus said his father didn't always understand him either in the carpenter shop or the taxes and the Roman soldiers. But that's no reason to judge his dad as being unloving and cruel. Let me take the log of selfishness out of your eye, Joe, Jesus said. Sally needed others to like her. She felt ugly and fat, with too big of a nose and eyes the wrong color, and with a brother always calling her names. And Jesus reminded her that she was special, just the way that God had created her, was great. Let me take the log of snobbishness out of your eye, he said, so that both you and your friends will love you. Grandma spoke of needing to sit down with everyone every day, just like they were doing right now. And as the alarm of our bedroom clock radio began drumming, I noticed that the family had all agreed with what Jesus said. May the sun not go down on their anger among them in the future. Oh yes, they'll have their spats. Every family does. But may they begin to work on the resentments which had been living in their home for much too long. Many seasons of change, may it come upon them. Be merciful, just as your God is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you.